When should you be concerned if your kid is always sick? What are the most common autoimmune diseases in children? Is playing in the dirt good for kids? All that and more on this episode of Because They're Kids. Welcome back to Because They're Kids, the podcast that's built just for kids and their parents. For those who may not know, I'm your host, Ann Baum, president of Lehigh Valley Riley Children's Hospital and mom of two. I'm excited to be back for another episode. Kids come in all shapes and sizes, but from teen to toddler, they all have one thing in common. They get sick. As a parent myself, I know how hard it is when your child gets sick, both on them and you. That's why today we're discussing what you can do to help keep your kid healthy. Here to help us talk about all things immunity are my guests, Dr. Tibby Villalobos, a pediatric infectious disease specialist at Lehigh Valley Riley Children's Hospital, and Dr. Dominique Bailey, a pediatrician with LVPG Pediatrics Easton. Tibby, Dominique, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us. What a pleasure.
Thank you, Anne, for having us. We're delighted to be here with you today.
That's great. Really looking forward to our discussion. So let's get into this. Why do kids get sick so often?
Well, the kids get sick because in the first few years of life, they are being exposed to things that they've never seen before. So their immune system is being developed and challenged every day, either with their siblings or if they go to school or they go to play dates. And this time of the year, when we have so many viruses circulating in the community, those children are going to be exposed very commonly. And if they attend daycare setting or other congregated places, that's going to be a constant exposure during the fall and winter seasons.
So it's not always a bad thing then?
It's not a bad thing to get sick in the first few years, as long as those illnesses are mild and you recover completely from them. In between, your child is thriving well.
That's great. So what can we do to keep our kids healthy while they're building their immune system, but also we don't want them to get too sick?
Well, a lot of it's common sense. So, for instance, a child should eat a very varied diet and a very healthy diet. So it's very important they get lots of fruits and vegetables, all different colors. They eat lean meat. They eat good fats. They get plenty of rest. And an average child, a school-age child, still needs between 10 to 12 hours of sleep, and a teenager needs 8 to 10. And we know many of those teenagers don't get anywhere near that at all. In addition to that, they need to remain active because that will help them do lots of play outside and get exposed to some environmental microbes that are actually going to build their immune system healthily, and reduce as much stress as you can in their life. So don't overschedule them, making sure that there's plenty of family time, plenty of downtime, but, you know, attending school and having fun and doing some activities.
That's great advice. Appreciate that. So what are some things that weaken a child's immune system? Obviously, they're getting exposed to the germs. This is good. Building the immune system, we try and keep them healthy. But what are some things that get in the way?
One of the things that have gotten in the way of in the past 2 years is that normally, by the time the children are get to kindergarten, they have enough exposure, they have enough virus experience. So now with the pandemic, we have two winter seasons when we have a number of children that because of the pandemic were never exposed to those traditional viruses that normally circulate during the winter. So by the time they are 4 or 5 years old, they don't get that sick anymore. So now we're having children that from age 0 to 2 or 3 never have anything because we were covered, we were isolated, they wore masks to go to school. So now the last year and this year, those children are constantly exposed by the sibling, by going places, and they don't have that immunity that they should have compared to past year. So that is aggravating the situation, and I understand why so many parents are now worried, oh, my child is getting sick so often compared to my older child and compared to other children, and it's because of that. Now we have a delayed immunity because of the lack of exposure due to the pandemic.
So ironically, the actions that we took to protect us against the COVID virus did not leave kids access to other viruses, and now they're building up that immunity.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So it protects against the COVID, but it also protects against kids having the flu or having RSV or having a strep throat during the fall and the winter and being immune for the next season and the following season after having them.
Right. So how do we know when it's just immunity building versus that child that's always sick? When, as a parent, do you need to take it to the next level?
So they would have other symptoms. They may have loss of appetite, fatigue, weight loss, and they wouldn't recover well in between. So they would be looking always sick. A mother would be worried. A father would be worried about it. And then we may have to make some steps to see if there's anything else going on.
And do we start with our primary care physician, with your pediatrician, and then they help you find the way?
Absolutely. It's generally best to come to your primary care because they know you best. They know the family. And then when we need to make referrals, make the appropriate referrals.
There are always some red flags that the parents may need to look at and why they need to be concerned if the kid is not just that virus after virus, but when things are getting a little bit out of hand and you may be worried that something else is going on. For example, a kid that doesn't go to daycare may have 1 or 2 ear infections during the fall and winter season after they have those viral infections. A kid that goes to daycare may have twice as much, but they recover in between and they continue to grow good appetite activity. So one of the red flags is when the kid gets sick often, but the illness lasts longer and it takes longer time to recover, or they are unusually severe. Like if you get admitted for an ear infection and you end up in the hospital, is that something that is expected from a child? When you have a pneumonia that it doesn't respond to the antibiotics at home and end up in the hospital more than once. So those things is the length of the infection, the time to recover, and the frequency, and how the child is in between. So if they recover and go on growing well and eating well and keeping up, it's unlikely. But those things that your child doesn't look healthy in between, that give you an idea, oh, maybe we need a referral, we need to look into and talk to the pediatrician.
Right. So those are those, a little bit of that gut parent intuition, and those red flags really are important when you're trying to figure out if it's just normal behavior or something more. Okay, so when it comes to autoimmune diseases, is this something that you're born with or something you can develop?
I think it's a little bit of both. Luckily, autoimmune diseases are rare in children. Some of them are related to genetic disorders that are unknown. So they are more frequent in certain families, but they may be acquired also later in life by the trigger that made them to develop those autoimmune diseases.
And what, when you say a trigger, what might be a trigger of something like that?
Even a viral infections can trigger an autoimmune disorder if you have the makeup or the genetic condition that predispose you to that. Like, for example, type 1 diabetes. So if you are a family member or your parents or grandparents or uncles have type 1 diabetes, there is an increased chance that your children may have type 1 diabetes, but you don't know when that may happen. So you keep observing and expecting and get the advice from your pediatrician on how to look for. But sometimes a virus can trigger that immune system to start working and then start attacking itself, which is the base of the autoimmune disease. Instead of helping you to fight disease, then for some reason, it turns against your body or some organs and it starts attacking them.
Right. And thank you for explaining that. So when we say autoimmune disease, can you give us a little bit more for our audience what that actually means? Yeah. We hear the word, but what does that mean?
So the immune system is supposed to protect us. We make antibodies to protect you from diseases that normally occur early in childhood, and some of them will last a lifetime so we don't get them again. When we see them again, we have a memory that makes, oh, I know that disease and we're not going to get it again. We're going to fight it. So for some reason that we don't know, there is a switch. And after having an infection or for a reason we don't know, that same immune system doesn't recognize your own cells or your own organs and start attacking them. And depends on which organ is affected, you will have different symptoms depending. But it's like something happened and the immune system start fighting you back.
Right. So it's basically going after itself.
Correct.
Yeah. So how do you know if your child has an autoimmune disease? Obviously, you're working with your primary care physician. What are some signs to be watching for?
One of them is fever for unknown reasons. So fevers that are not due to an infection or a virus, and they don't have a pattern. They don't seem the usual pattern. They come and go without anything specific. Rashes that happen for, again, no particular reason. That's why it's important to be with your pediatrician that knows you since you are little to know how to advise about what is a normal fever and rash or something that continues and repeats itself for weeks, sometimes months, without having a reason. Joint pain. Kids are not supposed, even if they're active, they're not supposed to have joint pain or joint swelling, muscle aches, fatigue. Kids are active even if they get tired after a play, after sports, they're supposed to bounce back. Loss of appetite, fatigue that continues for a long time. So those are also, again, red flags that something may be going on. And again, always look at the family history, if there is any family history of any autoimmune diseases that may be pertinent. GI symptoms, no growing well, belly pain for no reason. So those are things that over time make you think, okay, this is not my normal child. I need some advice. And that's why the pediatricians are so good about guiding you in the right direction.
That's excellent. Now, I know you mentioned that most kids don't have autoimmune diseases, but what autoimmune diseases do show up in children?
Depending on the age or the timing on the symptoms, I can give you the example about type 1 diabetes. Also, Crohn's disease, which is a disease where of the GI system where there is inflammation of your colon or your intestine because the body produces antibody that causes that inflammation. There is also juvenile arthritis that may present sometimes just with fever and rashes and not necessarily joint pain. There is also multiple sclerosis that it happens in adolescents and young adults too. So depending on the symptoms, you can have an idea what is the organ that is being involved in that.
Thank you so much for that. All right, let's switch topics and think about our immune system. What can you do to boost your child's immunity?
Yeah, so just as we talked about in the beginning of the segment, it's really important they eat a very varied diet. They get plenty of rest. They have good activity. They have downtime, reduce their stress. But as far as the diet's concerned, you want to make sure that they're eating whole grains, lots of good lean proteins, good fats such as plant-based lipids, and lots of varied fruits and vegetables. As far as supplements are concerned, we don't generally recommend them. We'd much rather that they get all their vitamins, their vitamin D, A, and their zinc from whole foods. And there's various, depending on what you're looking to increase. For instance, vitamin D is very ubiquitous in many, many foods, but you know, generally your dairy, zinc you're going to find in your lean proteins, vitamin K in your leafy greens. So all those things are so important. Occasionally we get kids that are not great eaters. So I had a picky eater myself and they're very frustrating. But what I generally recommend to a parent is once a week, try something new on their plate, but try a very small amount of it. And if they eat it, then I ask the parents to reward them with time. So I said, give them extra 15 minutes of time just with one parent or both parents, as opposed to rewarding them with food. And if they don't, just kind of ignore it, but just keep on trying. And oftentimes just that positive reinforcement they get with the little extra attention from one parent or both parents can make a world of difference as far as the picky eating is concerned. You can also hide vegetables in some of the foods, for instance, you know, pancake batter, you can put some pureed butternut squash in it, some spaghetti sauces, if you can get to eat that, you can shred some vegetables into that, and then make it fun, make the plate look fun for the kids, you know, decorate a carrot or something like that, so they're indulged that, and the kids love to dip, and I, you know, recommend like giving them vegetables that they can dip and other foods that they can dip in, and all that is going to create a wonderful immune system in a child.
That's great. I love the stealth vegetable idea, mm-hmm. baking it into something. And I've heard a lot about eat the rainbow, getting a lot mm-hmm. of color on the plate. Mm-hmm. And you would agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's wonderful. So when you're thinking of eating and creative eating, you said decorate vegetables, hide them in there. Mm-hmm. When you have that really stubborn picky eater. Mm-hmm. At what point is it a problem and do you need to reach out for help?
Well, I think if you have a child that only eats five things and they're all white, we need to, which I often see, pizza crust, insides of Oreos, things like that, that we probably should do a battery of blood work to see if there's, you know, any nutritional deficiencies, looking at vitamin levels and looking at their blood count and everything. And, you know, certainly if that restrictive behavior has gone on for, you know, a period of times, I would say at least 3 to 6 months, then I really think we should look into food therapy for the child and a nutritionist.
Food therapy. Tell us more. What does that mean?
Well, that'll be a therapist. It's usually an occupational therapist that will introduce different textures to a child. And sometimes they'll just have them sniff it, you know, to start. And then, you know, and then maybe they can get it close to their mouth. So it's a very slow process. But over the course of months, usually we have some good results with it.
Well, that's great. And I know some kids are really sensitive to texture, just like they might be sensitive to sound. Is texture sometimes one of the reasons an individual is
a
picky eater?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see that in adults, where an adult may not like a pudding because they maybe had a muscle memory as a child like that, and they'll just seem to avoid it. And the kids are the same way.
You talked about making a fun plate and the elements that would go on there. What does a good meal look like on that plate?
So about 50% of the plate should have fruits and vegetables on it. I don't get too wound up if the kids don't eat vegetables. The only thing they're lacking is the vitamin K from their leafy green vegetables. So if they're fruit centric and they love berries and grapes and orange segments, that's what I tell the parents to do. And then about a quarter of the plate should be their protein and about a quarter their a good carbohydrate. So, you know, if we can get some whole grains in them, that'd be great. Like, you know, quinoa and, you know, good wild rice, brown rice, all different things. Or even a mixture, you know, mixing some white rice into with some brown rice, you know, a little bit at a time.
That's great. And are there some proteins that are better than others at boosting the immune system? Or is it lean protein across the board?
I would say, you know, stick with the healthier meats, which is going to be your lean proteins. But I think kids should also have hamburgers and pork chops if they want and things like that.
So what are some guidelines to use in selecting vitamins or prebiotics and probiotics? I know there are a lot of advertisements out there for things. It's difficult to choose.
It can be very overwhelming for a parent because they're going to get information from many different sources, friends, neighbors, and obviously the internet and Facebook. So I always recommend you stick with a national name brand formula. So I'd look for a good multivitamin, whether it's liquid or chewable, depending on the age group, with some added minerals. Sometimes it's hard to get that zinc in the kids. And so I'd like to add the added minerals with that. Otherwise, with the prebiotics and the probiotics, it's really best to try to get those from a food source, the probiotics coming from cultured foods like sauerkraut, yogurt, kefir, things like that. And then the prebiotics from fiber-containing foods, some bananas, plantains, things like that. But otherwise, there's very good supplements for probiotics and prebiotics. And there is some evidence that they definitely help to boost the immune system. And of course, having the appropriate vitamin levels are going to do that too.
That's great. And I'm sure your pediatrician can help with that recommendation as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
So let's think a little bit about outdoor play and how that gets into boosting the immune system. We've heard about kids playing in the dirt and that's a good thing, a bad thing. Tell us more about that.
So I'll approach it first and then I'll let Tibby take over. But, you know, years ago, we were an agrarian society. So we spent most of our time outdoors and there were a lot less diseases. We had a boosted immune system, you know, I'd say like 100 years ago. And now we spend most of our time indoors. So we're exposed to a lot of indoor allergens and we have lack of activity too. So I think, you know, it's multifactorial. But I think kids playing outside is terrific, even in the winter, as long as they're dressed appropriately.
That's great.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I used to live in the South, where the winters are short and the summers are humid and long. So kids used to play longer in the outside. Then the rural kids, of course, spend more time compared to the urban kids. And right about probably about 10, 15 years ago, there was a very good study that came out of the Medical College of Georgia that showed that kids that of urban areas and living indoor have less exposure to natural antigens that are in the environment, and therefore they have more asthma, skin allergies, and environmental allergies. Mm-hmm. So that exposure to also normal, natural components of the environment may protect you against developing allergies later on in life. So it boosts your immune system to play outdoors.
So these little exposures really add up in boosting the immune system.
Yes, mm-hmm. And some of us parents, I mean, I do infectious diseases, so I know about germs. So then we become germophobes. And we clean everything with Lysol and Clorox and sanitizer. So that's natural barriers that the body needs to develop to fight the germs are not there. So when they finally encounter them, then they develop, it's kind of a no autoimmune, but an exacerbated reaction to those exposures. So if you gradually introduce the kids to the natural things, yes, play in the dirt. They play, you know, barefoot on the backyard. Not that I wanted that to happen, but because of all the issues, but in a healthy way and know how to protect them, a good dose of outdoor play is advisable to boost the immune system.
So where do we find that balance between keeping your house clean and sanitary and getting exposed with those little bits of the germs?
I mean, the best, and that applies to everywhere in healthcare in developing countries, everywhere in the world, the best measure is washing your hands. Hand washing has shown to prevent all infectious diseases at all levels, in the healthcare level, in the staff that work in the medical field. Hand washing before and after a play, after coming from outdoors, always keeping that common sense that you also need to shower after you are exposed to the outdoors. All those common sense things help you to keep that balance about how much exposure. It's okay to play in the dirt, just don't eat the dirt. That's another issue we can talk about later.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. So how would you like to leave our audience? What are your great pieces of advice about keeping kids healthy and understanding disease as it's here present in our community, especially during the winter when things really pop up?
Well, I think a lot of it is common sense. Like we've talked about, all the different measures to keep your child as healthy as you can, and also being judicious in trying to avoid germs when you can. For instance, we know that in big indoor public places are going to be a germ pool. I especially recommend to parents with newborns not to take the child out for at least 2 to 3 months, at least out into public places. They can go outside. Fresh air is great for a baby. And the hand washing, I tell them, I'm just going to reiterate what Dr. Villalobos said, that that's the number one way to prevent infection in your child.
Right.
And also, let's not forget about the vaccines. The vaccines are also an important way to boost the immune system. We have vaccines that are designed for the infant to protect them against pneumonia, ear infection, blood infection, brain meningitis, that brain infection. So let's not forget that keeping our kids vaccinated prevents them from having some serious infectious diseases. When our kids don't get vaccinated, then the circulation of those bacteria and viruses increases. And be mindful of that. I want to remind everybody, we are in the winter of 2024, now coming beginning, and we have an outbreak of pertussis, whooping cough, north of our valley. We also have a few cases of measles in the Philadelphia area. So when we forget about how good the vaccines may be to protect against those, then the diseases start reappearing again. So the vaccines, yes, they do protect and they boost your immune system. Just another tool to keep your kids healthy.
That's great advice.
Additionally, I wanted to mention to the parents that we have many, many children hospitalized with influenza. We haven't even peaked in our influenza season, that it looks more like a traditional season compared to other, but we have much more cases. And the common things on these children that seem to be sicker and end up in the hospital is that no one of them has been vaccinated for the flu this season. It is a reminder that the flu vaccine is not perfect. It's not going to protect you against getting the flu 100%, but the kids that have gotten their flu vaccine for several seasons do have immunity, and it keeps you from getting severe flu and end up in the hospital. Just a reminder that it's not too late still to get your flu vaccination this year.
Dominique and Tibby, thank you so much for joining us today. Any final thoughts before we wrap up episode 2 of Because They're Kids?
I think we went over tons of information, and hopefully it will be very helpful to the local parents. And it was such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Again, thank you. And thank you, Nikki, for being here with us and let us share your time and hopefully provided some useful advice for you and your family.
Well, there you have it. For more kid-focused health tips, advice, and must-know news about Lehigh Valley Riley Children's Hospital, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at LVHN Children. And remember, every parent needs a partner through parenthood. So make sure to subscribe or follow Because They're Kids wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.